Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
All right, well, it looks like you made it till Friday, so we're here with the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. Oh, of course, I am the Big Jack as I'm shuffling through some stuff, but, you know, I did say it was Friday.
Start spreading the news.
Schomburg Stu is here. How you doing, Stu?
All right, we'll see. The new phone will hold the charge for the full show.
All right, well, if you'd like to call into the podcast and talk to Stu or I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something popping up there sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, we'd greatly appreciate it. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, we still don't have Stu on Twitter yet, but I am out there at Burke Time if you'd like to hunt me down, and I wouldn't have any issues passing along any messages to Stu. So there you go. I think that's it. Yeah, that sounds like it's it. So, all right. Well, you know, Stu, I wanted to start this off. I asked Dan this yesterday, and he didn't seem to think it was such a big deal. But I was wondering how you felt about the Cubs deciding to go with Kyle Hendricks as the opening day starter instead of, well, Yu Darvish or John Lester.
Well, I thought that was certainly the logical choice for the Cubs to make based upon the way the pitchers have performed during their brief spring training. And it seems like it's a solid choice to me. And so far, Darvish has not been Yu-like so far, not to say that he won't be later on during the abbreviated season, but I certainly think that's the right choice to make. And what did you guys also think about that decision? Were you in agreement?
Well, you know, I mean, I like Kyle Hendricks, and in reality, I'm more kind of in the boat right now where I'm not sure how much a starter is going to matter, because I just don't know if you're going to get more than three or four innings. So, you know, I kind of want to wait and see on how they're handling these guys, because let's be fair. I mean, if you're only going to get a guy for three innings, you could run the majority of your pitching staff out there and just hope that he can get you nine outs without giving anything up.
Yeah,
so I kind of want to see how that works first.
I'm going to look for maybe 90 pitches in his first outing, five innings. I hope he can go that far at least.
So, yeah, what I'm really disappointed in, and I know there was a team that talked about it, but I really wanted to see a team try to set it up where they went starter, starter, closer, and they tried to go 4-4-1. You know, and I really think it could have saved them, you know, some arms or, you know, stuff like that. And I get it. Not every guy would be able to go four. You know, you're going to have your bad days. You know, that happens when you have a full spring training. But I thought it might have been a good idea, especially just kind of for development purposes. You know, if you're a bad team, if you're the Tigers or the Mariners or a team like that that's going to be out of it from the start, you know, in a season like this, I would be looking at this as a way to develop my guys. And, you know, I would want to run them out there in conditions where it seems like they were starting. So, you know, I would go starter, starter, and then if I'm winning, I run my closer in for the inning. You know, and I can't remember which team I heard talking about that, but it doesn't look like anybody's going to do it.
No, it's an interesting idea, though, and especially for the non-contending teams. But with this kind of a crazy season coming up, you can't discount anybody at the early stages of the game, the way it's going to work the first two or three weeks of the season might be all important in determining who the bona fide contenders are. There could be some major surprises. An unexpected team could get up to a hot start, and then they would certainly have to revert to a normal schedule. They might start out with your idea, but if they start winning, they would have to revert back to the norm.
Well, you know, I mean, if it's still working for you, you know, you could keep going with it.
Yeah, it seems to me that
I
know that years ago, I think that there was a surprise in the World Series. It could have been the Phillies, and they started their closer to start the game. And I think he did a good job, too. But you don't see those things happen very often.
Well, actually, you know, you've got the Tampa Bay Rays who have come up with, as they call it now, the opener. You know, that guy goes out there and pitches an inning or two, and then the guy who would have naturally started the game comes in and tries to take it from there. I still don't kind of really understand what that does for you, because, you know, whether he faces the first six batters or he faces the same six batters in the fourth or the fifth inning, I don't understand it. But, you know, it worked out analytically, and, you know, all those guys geeked out about it, so it became a thing. So that, you know, we have that now.
Well, if it works out analytically, whether it's sound or not, you know they're going to continue doing that. Or at least the Geek Squad is going to be talking about how great an idea it was. But what happens if it backfired on them? What would they do then? What kind of excuses
would they
make?
It's odd when it doesn't work, because then they just don't talk about it. You know, it's one of those things where they just kind of act like it didn't happen. You know what I mean? I don't know how many guys I've heard on just the different sports networks where they have championed a cause and you've got to do this and this is going to go for you, and the team does it and it blows up in their face, and all of a sudden they never said that. And I'm like, what do you mean you never said that? I heard you last week talking about what a great idea this was. Now it didn't work, and you're telling everybody what a bad idea it was. And the one guy who was notorious for it, Colin Cowherd, when he was on the Mickey Mouse Network, he was a nightmare for that. And it got so bad, I just had to stop watching him. Because I liked his co-host. He was with that Michelle Beadle when they started that one show years ago. But he was such a tool bag and just couldn't take accountability for, like, when he was wrong. I had to give up watching the show, and I get it. He's a big star now on, you know, Fox Sports 1, and, you know, he's got the radio show they air over TV. But, you know, if you listen to him a little bit, he'll tell you something, and then deny he said it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he would. If his idea worked, you'd probably be hearing about it for several days after it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, anytime he was right about something, he couldn't stop talking about it. But, yeah, they should go with this idea. Well, they did, and it didn't work. Oh, well, I never said that. Wait, does somebody have a tape of this? Can we just play this back? So, he was the one I heard the most do it, but I've heard multiple guys, you know, like some of them just don't say anything about it ever again. So, you know, like I've heard guys call on the radio and try to call guys out, and they just hang up on them. You know, like I would do here if somebody tried to do that. No, I actually wouldn't do that. We've admitted plenty of times that we've been wrong here. So
this is, of course, the regular announcers are never going to do that. They're never going to admit they're wrong. I suppose there may be a few out there who are at least can man up and say that, hey, I thought this was going to happen. It didn't work out. I was wrong. But you won't find too many of them doing it.
Yeah, and, you know, that's always kind of weird, because I don't understand why you wouldn't just say, hey, you know, I thought this was a really good idea. They tried it. It didn't work out. You know, let's talk about why it didn't work out. You know, I mean, you could have your topic right there for the show. So.
Yeah, it's like the Cup fans in a normal game, and the pitcher is starting to get hit a little bit. Take him out of there. Get him out of there. and the manager comes out and removes a pitcher, and they put in a pitcher. Everybody thinks it's a great idea, and he gives up a grand slam.
Yeah.
We've seen
that
many times.
Joe Men's technique with Kyle Hendrick, you know, once he got into the fourth inning, if he gave up a hit, he was basically yanked. You know, and it was like, what did he do? He gave up a single with two outs in the bottom top of the fourth. Why are we taking him out?
Yeah, well, he made some horrific mistakes in the World Series, but fortunately, it turned out in the Cubs' favor. But it could have been disastrous, some of those decisions, looking back
yeah.
in retrospect.
Yeah, he definitely was not any type of managerial help for them, but somehow they still managed to win, fortunately. So,
yeah. Well, you know what my saying is regarding that, right?
Win if you can, lose if you must, but always cheat. Oh.
Well, that's one of them. That was a gorgeous George expression. I was going to say something like, we don't care who wins as long as it's the Cubs or some other of those classic lines. Yeah, like you say, in hindsight, it's easy to take credit when it works in your favor, but not so easy when you can man up and say, hey, I thought this would be a good idea, and it just didn't happen.
So, yeah, and I did see some more Cub news here. They have officially selected the contract of I'm guessing this is your new favorite player, veteran infielder Jason Kipnis officially makes the team, and they sent they had a Rule 5 pick, a player by the name of Trevor. I'm going to guess this is Megill. He'll have the option to be returned to it looks like they got him from the Padres here, so the Padres will have an option to reclaim him. But, yeah, so it looks like Jason Kipnis makes the team. I did see a depth chart that had him starting at second base. Are you excited there? Because I kind of thought I would rather see like Nico Horner and we would give the young guy a shot. Or do you the veteran move here?
No, I would prefer Horner in there because I think that Kipnis's better days are behind him. He has certainly not been very impressive the last couple of seasons. His batting average is way down and. This has gone on for, what, two or three years, I'd say now, that he's regressed quite a bit, and he's not a youngster anymore, and he's a solid player, and he's good to have as a backup, but I don't see him as a starting second baseman for the Cubs.
Yeah, even in that, I'm guessing this is that early spring training that we canceled. He didn't get off to a very good start there. He has a career 261 hitter, but he hasn't hit that in, you know, the past three seasons.
No, not even close. Not even close.
So, I guess it's nice, you know, you have the veteran presence there. And, you know, obviously he has the World Series experience because he was on the Indians when the Cubs beat them. But, yeah, I just don't know, you know, if he's going to be that good of an add or that big of an add to the team.
Well, maybe he'll be rejuvenated because he's a local product and now playing for a team that he always rooted for when he was a kid. Maybe that'll jumpstart his career again, although I doubt it myself.
Yeah. You know, I guess, you know, and again, like you said, though, you know, being that it's 60 games, if he gets off to the right start, you know, I mean, momentum could carry him a long way, and, you know, next thing you know, he's hitting 300 and they can't get him out. So, who knows?
Yeah, and it's going to be a very strange season anyway. I would imagine that we've talked about this, that the ratings will be pretty high for the first few games, but I'm wondering if we'll see a dramatic reduction in the ratings just because of the atmosphere not being there, a normal baseball game.
Well, you know, I think a lot is going to depend on how this whole kind of virus situation plays out because, you know, there's a lot of places that are, you know, starting to close bars and restaurants again, you know, and a lot of those places you would go. So, you know, if you're going to be home, well, what the hell, let's watch the ball game.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you get the opportunity to go out, you may not watch it as much. So I think that's going to be the, you know, the kind of, I don't want to say key, because it's obviously a serious illness situation here. But, you know, it's going to be a big role in the situation and how things kind of play out.
Well, one thing that will help
yeah.
for baseball is that the fact that most networks now are just showing reruns. There's not new much in the way of new programming. So that probably will help them get a good start to the ratings.
Yeah, it really should. I mean, I assume, you know, Thursday they're opening up with the Yankees at the Nationals, and then it's, what is it? It's Dodgers. Is it Dodgers Angel? I can't remember the second game there. I'll have to, have to double check the schedule. But yeah, it's gonna. You know, I think that's going to pop really big. And, you know, now, you know, especially now, you know, everybody has the Mickey Mouse Network. So, you know, they'll be able to watch it there. But yeah, I can't see it. I can't see it not doing well. I mean, I would be shocked if it didn't, just get a huge rating.
Yeah. I think they'll do well, but I'm thinking about watching the games myself. Of course, I will be starting out watching the games. I think it's going to be a lot of action and excitement lacking when you play in an empty stadium like they'll be playing. That's a big factor as far as I'm concerned.
And I did look. It's Giants-Dodgers is that second game on that opening night. So, yeah, well, you know, the biggest thing I'm concerned with is, and I honestly think, unfortunately, we're going to get this, is we're going to get a lot of bad baseball right off the bat, because I just don't think they're going to be ready to play.
Probably
you
not.
Know, I mean, all they've done is, you know, intercept scrimmaging, and, you know, I mean, they can say whatever they want, but they're not going 100% there. So,
yeah, I think there'll be a lot of rust. Yeah, they had a little bit of a spring training now, but it's going to be different. Well, one thing might help them, though, is they'll be playing right off the bat, they'll be playing in warm weather, which is not the case when
yeah.
the normal season starts.
Well, at least not here.
No, for sure not here. I mean, we could be snowed out a few times, and yeah. it has happened. So that might loosen the muscles a little bit more than they would normally happen to the players just starting out at the beginning of the season. And it seemed to me traditionally,
yeah.
when the season first started, a normal season, that the pitchers would have a huge advantage over the hitters when the weather was cold. So are you looking for some slugfest now, more so than not, when the season starts?
Yeah, you know, I'm not, you know, it's so almost unclear on what the heck we're actually going to get. That I really just don't know, you know, because, like, it's so hard to judge from the inner squad game. You know, if we had some spring training games, you could actually see where a pitcher is and what they kind of looked like and, you know, get a general idea of how they're throwing the baseball. But in these games, you can't tell anything. You know, I mean, I don't know who's good or who's bad or – you know, who looks like they're on track. And, you know, what I'm thinking is we may get some slugfests early, because I think these first few games are going to be very similar to spring training games.
Yeah, I can see that happening.
So, you know, that could be the, you know, the issue there is it's going to be kind of like, oh, well, hey, here we – you know, because it's gonna. You got to figure a lot of pitchers aren't gonna have a feel for all their pitches, and if they're just gonna go out there throwing fastballs, well, you know, you're gonna get lit up.
Yeah, you know, that's gonna happen, and it'll be very interesting. The first few games, at least, there'll be a curiosity factor, but I'm not sure that it's gonna hold the same interest to me as it would for a normal season.
Yeah, you know, it's just so hard because you're looking at this and it's like, you know, it's 60 games. what's it actually going to play out.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of years ago when the Cubs had small crowds, when they were a normal season, they had small crowds. And even watching a game on TV, you're not quite as excited about watching a game when there's a small crowd in the actual fan in the stadium as compared when there's a full standing room only loud crowd cheering a team on. There's a huge difference, even as a spectator watching on TV as compared to a normal game. That's a big difference as far as I'm concerned. The atmosphere is going to be huge.
Yeah, I honestly hope that they don't do a lot of shots of, the empty seats. Because I don't want to see that. We know people aren't there. I don't need you to, go over and over and show me, oh, look, there's nobody here. Yeah, I know there's nobody there. Thank you. So.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you see any part of that inter-squad game, White Sox, that they had on the last couple of nights?
No, I haven't been watching much of it.
No, it was interesting to watch, but the announcer tried to keep the fans engaged a little bit. I think he's a pretty good announcer, that the new one. Well, he's not really new anymore, but he's a good announcer. And they tried their best to keep the interest up, but you could tell it's just different. In fact, they didn't show the balls and strikes, or they would show the score of the game between the home and visitors at the end of the inning, but that was about all they showed.
Yeah, well, this is going to be the year where you're going to find out which announcers are good and which announcers aren't. Because if your announcer stinks, wow, you're going to hear it just the way the games play out. The games are just going to be incredibly boring to watch and all that other stuff. I mean, you're going to be looking for something else to do while the game is on.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And there'll be some other sports competition in a couple of weeks, too, with the NHL resuming very soon. And has the NBA officially going to start playing at the end of the month also?
Yeah, everybody apparently is all set and ready to go come the end of the month. We're going to get everybody up and running, and, that's why I think, I believe the NHL is the one that's really going to suffer. I think they blew a big opportunity by, they made all their announcements first, and then they couldn't get their crap together and ended up not being able to get out first ahead of everybody else. So,
yes.
That's going to kill them, because baseball and basketball are still going to outdraw them no matter what.
And aren't there some odd times for the NHL games, too? Aren't some of them going to be in the afternoon? I thought I saw something quickly looking at the schedule. So that's going to be kind of strange.
Yeah, unfortunately, they're not really going to have a choice with the way they're going to try to get the games in. But, looking here, no surprise for the weekend there's afternoon games. But, yeah, they start August 1st. On Monday, August 3rd, they have the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They have 5 games scheduled anywhere from 11 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
Yeah, that reminds me of the an Olympic-type games, right, when they used to show all the games in the Olympics at odd times of the day, morning, afternoons. So you know they're not going to get much in the way of ratings for that. Of course, a lot of people are still home.
But, if you're going to get your games in, you've got to do it. The NBA is doing the same thing on, they open July 30th with 2 games, so they're both night games. But they come back the next day with, 6 games here? Yeah, and they're anywhere from – the first one has a 1:30 start time, and the last one has an 8 o'clock start time. So they're, it's the only way you can do it and, legitimately get all these games in.
And what about baseball? Are they going to have more afternoon games than normal for this abbreviated season?
Yeah. You know, of course, depending on how the way things kind of shake out. But yeah, it appears they will be, you know, because they have to get the games in. You know, just depending on when your availability is, you know, like when you're going to play. And of course, you know, you would like to get your television market to yourself.
Yeah.
Look like noon games almost every day of the baseball season, which will be nice. You know, if I'm going to watch it, you might as well give me an afternoon game.
I'm wondering if there are any sponsors that are going to opt out because of the times the games are going to be played or the short season. Or is everybody going to be back on board as usual?
You know, I'm sure that a lot of those guys have already been refunded their money, so, you know, or at least part of their money. So I'm sure they'll just take at this point whatever they're going to get out of it and kind of run with that. But, you know, maybe there's a few. Because I did see, you know, here in Chicago, the Alderman actually approved just for this year to allow the Cubs to play more night games on the weekends.
You know, because of the situation.
And that's a rarity. I don't know if they, you know, this may actually be a time that they didn't have to pay off a politician to get it done, you know, with the situation going on. So.
When the season first starts out in baseball, is there going to be limited capacity for fans, or is it going to be all the initial games going to be played with an empty stadium?
You know, again, that's one of those things where it depends what state you live in. You know, because they're doing things state by state. Like I had originally heard Texas was going to allow 5,000 people in to games for the Rangers and the Astros. Now, I don't know if that's still valid because I haven't been checking, like, the coronavirus numbers to see, you know, who's jumped or who hasn't jumped or, you know, anything like that. So, yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I'm assuming the states like California, where the numbers really went up, and Florida probably won't have people in. And I did see Pennsylvania has announced that the Phillies and the Pirates will not have fans to start the season. You know, and again, it's just, you know, you kind of play it, you know, week by week with this, so who knows?
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see let's assume there's a state in which they're going to allow 5,000 fans to a game as compared to others. As you mentioned, they will not be allowing fans. How are those fans going to be selected? By lottery? Or are they going to be a lottery among the season ticket holders? I wonder how they're going to work that.
Yeah, what I heard, and while the details weren't released, apparently the Cubs sent a letter to their season ticket holders explaining how it was going to work when they were going to be allowed to have fans back. But, it hasn't been made clear to the general public. I guess, obviously, the general public doesn't need to know because they won't be going anyways.
Right.
You know, I mean, you and I just walk up to the window and buy tickets. So.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. And, by the way, I know you're looking forward to the weekend when you'll be able to watch the Cubs and the White Sox play two night games back-to-back tomorrow and Sunday.
That's what I need to do is, well, actually I won't be able to watch it because we're having fantasy drafts tonight and tomorrow.
So. And even I'll be able to watch those games. I can watch them on the White Sox network. I still get that.
There you go. Yeah. Cause otherwise you'll be out. So, well, luckily I think that first Cub game is on the Mickey Mouse network. So as long as it's not blacked out there, you'll be able to see it. Otherwise it looks like it's bad news for you, you know?
Yeah, we never know about whether it's going to be blacked out in the Chicagoland market or not. It's always confusing because some are when they're on ESPN and some are not.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm guessing being that it's the Cubs' first game, you know, the Mickey Mouse Network is going to want that rating, you know, because that's going to pop a huge rating being that it's the Cubs and, you know, they're going to want that. So I'm guessing they'll be able to show it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. They're playing with Milwaukee. Is that their first games?
Yes, it is.
The Brew Crew.
So.
Yeah, it's going to be certainly a strange season, no matter how you slice it. It's going to be unique in the annals of baseball, and not in a good way.
No, it's definitely a, you know, it's going to be a mess. No matter what they do or how they try to do it. So we'll, I guess we'll just ride it out and see how it ends up playing out.
Yeah, we have no choice in the matter.
So, but I know you were asking how MLB would handle like an outbreak. And I did see they didn't actually say how they would handle an outbreak within a team, but they did say that if there's an outbreak in a city where a team is, Major League Baseball actually has the authority to move that team to a neutral site market if they feel it's safer for the players.
Well, that would be interesting if that happened.
Yeah, because there's actually
areas like California and Florida, for example, are really having their hands full lately.
Well, there's actually been talk because the numbers in Washington, D.C. have increased so vastly that they're actually considering moving Thursday's game to the National Single A ballpark in Virginia.
I guess there must be a smaller number of the virus cases in Virginia than it is in Washington.
Yeah, and like a situation like that could really be weird because, some of those minor league ballparks are smaller, not so much fan-wise, but dimension-wise. So, you could get these odd anomalies where, a guy hits four bombs and none of them went more than 325 feet.
Yeah, that would be an unfair advantage for a team that hits the long ball a lot, too. Of course,
right.
Everybody goes for the long ball now anyway. So what difference does it make?
Yeah, all you got to do is hit a lot of fly balls and, they're getting out. So, but I will be interested to see if, MLB juices the baseball to get us, see if they go that route again to try to get us get better ratings. So I'm not sure which way they'll go, but, it'll be something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, you're anticipating some 14 and 12 games, huh? To start the season out.
It would surprise me, just because, they gassed the ball up last year trying to help things out. What's weird is they don't seem to understand that home runs slow the game down, but they think it's exciting and that's what people want to see, so they continue to do it. And I know their excuse was the seams on the ball were lower from the manufacturer. Yeah, nobody buys that. You guys set it up that way. None of us are that stupid. I won't be surprised if they, come up with something magical this year where we're seeing a bunch of home runs to start.
Have you ever heard the theory, and I've heard this, and I need your opinion on this one, that a home run, if a team's going through scoring some runs and making a comeback in the game, and the team hits a home run, it's a rally killer. The bases are now emptied, so the rally is going to be negated because of that. Have you ever heard that theory?
That was actually Earl Weaver, the manager with the Baltimore Orioles. That was his theory.
Yeah.
You'd be rallying, you're rolling along and everything looks great, and your guy, you got two guys on, and your guy hits a three-run bomb, and it kills your rally because now there's nobody on.
Well, I knew a baseball historian like you would know the story, how that story generated.
So, it's an interesting theory. I don't know how much validity there is to it, just because it's kind of like, I believe most teams would take the three-run homer. So, I can't guess you can't complain too much there, but and, depending on how you look at it, it could make some sense.
Yeah.
You go knock after knock, all of a sudden the bases are empty and it's quiet out there.
That's true, but don't forget, don't tell it to David Bodie, who hit that grand slam a few years ago, and also to to Harper, who hit the game winner against the Cubs last year. Those home runs meant the ball game. Of course, we're talking about mid-innings, maybe the fourth, fifth, sixth inning, and not a game situation like the ninth.
Yeah, you know, and again, it just kind of, you know, I think a lot depends just kind of how you look at it. You know, I mean, how do you feel, or, you know, do you think it, you know, it would, like, I don't think it's that big a deal. You know, obviously, I believe that a lot of it has to do with where you are in your lineup.
That's true.
You know,
also.
Because, I mean, if you think about it, you know, if your seven hitter hits a three-run bomb, well, you got your eighth and your ninth hitter coming up, who are usually normally weaker hitters anyways. So are you really surprised when they
– sure. Yeah, depending on
the end.
And by the way, we're National League fans. We got to get started used to that, the DH rule this year, don't we?
Yes. You know, and now we don't have to listen to anybody complain about trading Kyle Schwarber.
No.
No. Because he has a role.
Either way, he has a role, either as a left fielder or as a DH.
So, and I don't think I asked you this one. I know I asked Dan about it, but I don't think I asked you this one. How concerned are you about Anthony Rizzo's back issues?
That's an ongoing thing with him, and normally it doesn't happen at the beginning of the season, though. It usually goes into a month or two before his back starts to ache, and I've got a feeling right now, I'm a little concerned. I don't think he's going to make the opening lineup for the first game. He might miss the first week or so of the season. And that's not good because, as we pointed out earlier, you're going into hot weather right now, so you think the back would be loose by now and not a factor.
Well, apparently it's not muscular. He had an MRI done, and it's inflammation in the back. So
what did they say? What's causing the inflammation? Or just
they just said that the MRI showed inflammation in his back. So, you know, they're kind of, you know, he's day to day, like, you know, just everybody is. So, but, you know, like Dan brought up a good point, you know, even if he's healthy, you know, if you think about it with like that back issue, you know, if he takes, you know, one hard swing, he could be out.
Yeah. And it won't be just a day or two either. You know, if he takes the one swing and really aggravates his back, you're talking about a week or two. And that's something that's going to be a big, big factor because of the shortened season. Compounds the issue.
Yes, because that brought up our other point. If you're David Ross, what do you do if he's out? Who plays first base?
Well, there's a couple of good alternatives. I think Caratini can play first base, and he certainly showed that he's improved as a hitter from last season. I mean, he will be my first choice. Or
so,
you have someone else in mind. Ian Happ.
Jason Kipnis.
Has Kipnis ever played first base? I don't know about that.
I don't, hey, he played the outfield in college and the Indians put him out there in the playoffs. So, it just depends how you look at it.
Yeah. And of course, that's right. Chris Bryan can play first base too.
Has
on occasion.
Yeah. No, my first choice was Caratini. You know, I would love to see him in the lineup every day, and carrying the extra guys, you know, they have Josh Fagley in camp, who's a legitimate major league catcher. He could easily back up Contreras. They could even, you know, kind of switch off and let, you know, Contreras play some first to give him a break from the hot weather and let Caratini catch. You know, you could kind of go back and forth every few days. But that's where I was leaning. So.
Yeah, Caratini's a logical choice.
Because Ernie Banks ain't walking through the door. Because other than that, I was trying to think who else, You know, I mean, obviously you mentioned Bryant, but then you'd have to, you know, I assume Bodie would, you know, go in and play third. You know, but Caratini's a switch hitter, so that would make your lineup easier to juggle as well. You know, but, yeah, like, I don't think Schwarber could do it. I don't think that's a good fit for him.
What about,
you know, I'm trying, you know,
didn't Ian Happ play a couple of games at first base? I'm trying to think.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me. And, I mean, he is supposed to be the super utility guy, but apparently he's penciled in as the everyday left fielder this year.
Well, does that mean that Schwarber's going to be just a DH?
He's just a DH. You know, I mean, I'm sure he'll end up out there every once in a while. But, yeah, if – you know, my guess is he's probably going to DH 50 to 55 games this year. That would be – unless they're going to sit him against lefties, which would be stupid. But they do those kind of things.
So if Ian Happ is the everyday left fielder, that means that Elmore is going to hang around him. And because I can't think of anybody else who would play center field besides him or Happ.
Yeah, let me see what they got here. I'll go to the nice little spot where I found their roster before. This website is pretty reliable, and see what they have or if it's changed since the last time I was here. It's Hop in left, Almora in center, and Hayward in right. So.
And don't forget,
they do have Steven Souza Jr. on the bench, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him in left field and, you know, Hop getting the time in center. If Joe Maddon was still the manager, you know that would be the lineup because for whatever reason he hated Almora. But we'll see what David Ross does. And, yeah, Kipnis is penciled in as the starting second baseman here.
You know, Souza might be a nice addition for the Cubs if he's healthy.
He's
had some health issues the last few years.
Yeah, I think the last like three.
Right.
He is a rookie of the year. I think he won American League Rookie of the Year when he was with Tampa.
Yeah, the injury bug has really got to him the last few years. If he's healthy, he could be a nice acquisition for the Cubs.
Yeah, you know it's a nice bat to have on the bench. You know, and I mean, he can, you know, if Schwarber needs a day or, you know, one of the corner guys need a day, be it, you know, Hayward or Hop or whoever's playing the corner outfield, you know, he's a nice fill-in. I don't think I want to see him be an everyday guy, but, you know, he's a solid fill-in guy.
You think Ross is going to have a set lineup every day and not juggle things around like Maddon did?
No, you know, unfortunately, I think we're going to get the same thing. And, you know, it's going to be that thing where, you know, Chris Bryant plays third for a couple of days, and then all of a sudden he's in right field or left field. So, you know, it just kind of, you know, seems to be the deal that they're going to go with. And then, you know, with Kipnis at second, you're going to have an open mind, you know, an open mind there if he's legitimately the starter, you know, because it would be stupid not to get Nico Horner at bats. You know, I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. So.
What I'm afraid about is if Kipnis starts out with 150 over the first six or seven games, would they'd have to put Horner at second base if he's not doing the job, wouldn't he? Wouldn't they have to give him the opportunity?
You know, whether it's Horner or it's Descalzo or it's Bodie, you know, you got to run somebody else out there. I mean, you're going to have a 30-man roster to start, so you're going to have you know excessive players to use. You know, if a guy's struggling, you don't really have the time this season. You know, when it's 162 games, oh, yeah, drop him down in the order, give him the opportunity to work it out. That ain't happening this year, man. If a guy, you know, if he comes out and, you know, I mean, he's, you know, 2-for-24, you know, unless he's Christian Yelich, Aaron Judge, Mookie Betts, you know, that kind of guy, Bryce Harper, you got to get him out of your lineup. You can't ride with those guys. They're costing you games, and you can't afford that in this kind of season if you think you're a contender.
You know, and explain something to me. Why is Descalzo still on the roster?
Because he got a 2-year deal at really low money, so it's not costing them anything to keep him.
Yeah, but you want a 120 hitter a consistent 120 hitter on your roster?
Well, you know, that's what he was last year. Who knows what he'll be this year? You know, and he was hurt most of the time. He played really well in Arizona. You know, he was a really valuable utility guy for them. You know, it just didn't work out here. And again, I mean, it's not costing them anything. I should be able to get his salary here. But yeah, I know he didn't get very, you know, well, according to Major League Baseball, you know, numbers, he didn't get very much. Where is he? Descalzo. Yeah, he makes $2.5 million this year, and the Cubs have a club option next year for $3.5 million. So he, you know, the only guys making less than him are Kipnis Souza, Bodie, and the reliever Jeremy Jeffress.
Yeah, and Bodie, of course, has signed that long-term deal, which is a good thing for him, for a fringe player to sign that deal, give him some financial security.
Yeah, Bodie signed through 2024 with two option years, and you know, option year 25, option year 26. So he's, you know, he's okay.
He seems to be forgotten sometimes when they talk about the outfielders and the infield the Cubs have. It seems like he's the forgotten man, and he's been quite valuable for them since he's been with the team.
Yeah, you know, I think the issue becomes is, you know, and I don't know why the Cubs decided to go this route, but, you know, like you meant, you know, we know they signed Descalzo last year. I was really shocked to see them bring Kipnis in, but then, you know, they got that Robel Garcia, who was kind of the flavor of the month last year. And then they brought in Hernan Perez from the Brewers, and they all, you know, they're all these utility guys. And somehow they kind of got, you know, more or less pushed ahead of Bodie. You know, even though when I think it comes down to it, Bodie's going to be the guy getting the at-bats, he's just not the guy that gets talked about for whatever reason.
Yeah, and he's been pretty solid for them, too. He's won some big games.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, again, he's not one of those guys you want to see in the starting lineup every day. But, you know, he's a nice guy to have on the bench. And, you know, you need those kind of guys. You know, I think the thing that they may hold against him a little bit is, you know, he's not an outfielder. You know, he can play second, short, and third, but those other guys can all do that, plus play the outfield.
Yeah, and – so he's never been in the outfield at all. Has he played outfield at all during his career in the minors?
I thought he played a little bit, or they tried to play him in the outfield. So I'd have to double check that here and get. Let me pull up his player card. But yeah, I don't officially know it. I do think he. I know it was something they talked about, but I don't know, you know, I don't know if it was like that ill-fated move where they moved Kyle, you know, Javier Baez to the outfield in winter ball and it blew up.
Yeah.
Here you go. Yeah, last year he played 2 1/3 innings in right field. Other than that, he played 7 innings in left field in 2018, and that's it. So he's played a little over a full game in the outfield.
Well, he's had a few innings. At least he's had a couple innings there. But that would be a strictly emergency basis to ever consider him in the outfield, obviously. His strength.
You know, and that's where the other guys, you know, kind of have that little bit of an advantage on him. You know, because Descalzo can play all 3 outfield positions, and I believe so can Hernan Perez. So, you know, it gives you that just that little extra flexibility that teams really like, you know, nowadays.
It's nice to have that flexibility, but if you can't hit over a buck and a quarter, I don't think it does you much good to have that kind of flexibility.
and obviously, you know, that's the other thing. I mean, you know, you have to be able to provide on both ends of the spectrum there. Unless, of course, you're just a defensive guy who gets, you know, limited at bats, then it's, you know, it's not that big a deal. But I don't honestly think they even have those guys anymore, you know, where you just go in to play defense and you don't end up ever getting an at bat.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Flegley. Now, he's not much of a hitter. He's a good defensive catcher, but he really does not hit very well.
You know, when he was a White Sox, he hit fairly well. You know, the thing is, I mean, he's not a full-time catcher. I mean, he's just going to be, you know, the backup guy here. But, yeah, he's a 227 career hitter, but he did, you know, he played enough with the A's last year to get the double digits and home runs. So, you know, he showed some power. But yeah, he's, you know, he's not that guy you're going to want out there. Let's see. He did throw out 32% of the runners trying to steal. So that's a good number.
It is a good number. Yes.
So, you know, that's, you know, and obviously that, you know, and again, you know, you're looking at, you know, you've got Wilson Contreras and Victor Caratini. How often is he going to play?
Yeah,
you know, I
all.
Mean, that's,
not at all.
Yeah. You know, that's the situation where, you know, you get a blowout and it's like, all right, let's give Wilson a break, get Fagley in there. So.
Right. You talked about 32% being a pretty good number. The great defensive catchers in history, do you have any idea off the top what their percentage was, like Johnny Bench or Roy Campanella, Yogi Berra? I mean, were they over 40%, these guys? Or?
Yeah, I don't honestly know. I can tell, you know, I can grab a couple guys here and give you a number as long as my computer wants to catch up with me here. Over his career, Johnny Bench threw out 43% of runners trying to steal against him. Now that's really good. You know, I mean,
right.
that's let's see what else we can find here. Let's throw Yogi Berra.
That was impressive.
Yeah, Yogi Berra actually threw out 49% of the runners trying to steal against him. So that's obviously fantastic. So, I want to go a little more contemporary here first, because
right.
Who's the best defensive catcher in baseball? You know, Yadier Molina, obviously. So let's see what Yadi's stats are. Molina, for his career, has thrown out 40% of runners trying to steal against him. So, he's not, you know, it's hard to believe he's that far behind Bench and Berra. And let's see, where's here you go. Campanella threw out 57% of runners trying to steal again.
Yeah, that's an incredible number. Yeah, it's an absolutely incredible number. I never dreamed it would be that high.
So, yeah, and then, you know, the other guy, of course, you know, catcher with a great arm, had a long career, Pudge Rodriguez.
Yes.
He threw out 46% of runners trying to steal against him. So that's, you know, that again, another fantastic number. So, yeah, you know, Fagley is what you call good for today's game. But, yeah, when you start looking long term, there, you know, he's not going to compare to these guys.
No, and it seems to me that over the last years, the percentages have gone down for catchers. I don't think you're going to see anybody like Campanella anymore, or even Yogi Berra or Johnny Bench. You know, you're not going to see too many, very few above 40%, if at all. And I'm wondering what the reason for that is.
They've gotten a lot smarter now. I mean, if you notice, you know, every team has a coach at first base with a stopwatch. So he's timing the pitcher's delivery. You know, where before, I don't think they did that, obviously. You know, guys were just kind of on their own out there, and they went when they thought they could steal. But now, you know, it's such a science You know, and there's less attempts as well. You know, guys aren't trying to steal anywhere as much as they used to because
that's also true.
Analytically, it's looked at as wrong. So, you know, a lot of teams have really kind of wiped it out of their repertoire, and I believe, I was trying to remember, I don't think we had a guy get to 40 steals last year.
Yeah, it looks like it's a dying art. I don't know. I guess this is a home run or bust in today's baseball game.
Yeah, you know, I mean, unfortunately, you know, that's what sabermetrics has turned, you know, sabermetrics and analytics have turned the game into, you know, because that's, you know, that's what they give all their feedback on. And it's, you know, hey, you've got to hit home runs. You got to have power. You got to do all this crap. And
are you saying that the hit and run is dead? Is the hit and run a dying art now in today's baseball?
Boy, I don't know how many guys have hit and run.
And it's such a great play too. When executed properly, it's a beautiful play to watch. I always thought so. Smart
yeah,
base.
Here
but you don't see that
I looked it up
much
here.
Anymore.
There were three guys who stole 40 or more bases last year. Just three.
Yeah, that's today's baseball. It's a long ball and. It takes a lot away from the game.
Yeah. So, definitely. You know, it's just unfortunate that, you know, that's what the computer geeks have kind of turned it into. So, you know, oddly, there were only three guys who stole 40 or more bases. There were seven guys who hit 40 or more home runs.
Yeah. Well, that's your answer for you, right? That's the name of the game now. That's the name of the game, the long ball.
So, just, kind of how it works out. And then, to answer your hit-and-run question, I'm guessing a lot of the reasons that teams don't hit-and-run now is there were 17 guys who struck out 160 times or more. So it's difficult to put the hit-and-run on when you got guys at the plate who can't hit the baseball.
Yeah, and I would say it looks like the day of the punch and Judy hitter is over with, right? By today's standards, at least.
You know, I assume somewhere down the line a team is going to wake up and realize that, you know, you can get a second baseman who may only hit you five home runs but is hitting you 330 or 40 and could be very useful in your lineup. Sooner or later, somebody's going to figure that out, and, you know, we'll see a couple of those guys make a comeback. But the difficult part is getting through to the players, because the problem is home run hitters get paid. The guys who hit with two strikes, move the runners over, hit behind runners, sacrifice bunt, and do all that stuff don't get paid.
Your teammates may appreciate it, but management doesn't.
Right. You know, they don't see it. You know, when it comes to your salary, you know, you're not the guy putting butts in the seats. It's the guy hitting 50 bombs, striking out 180 times.
Yeah, and that's it's sad baseball that we have to live with nowadays.
So, I noticed some of the smaller markets. Well, I guess we'll have to continue this next Friday because I didn't realize we had just kind of run out of time here. On. Available to the list to run over your game or